Dee, are you going to need a couple minutes to set up? Nope. Good. We're ready to rip. Dr. Pierce, you ready to rip?
Yes, indeed.
Rip away.
All right. Under tab 4, you'll find all the materials related to scallops. And there is a lot of material there. A lot of good work done by the staff related to analyses that are required for this framework, because indeed that's what we're all about today on scallops, and that is to approve framework 22 and select the proposed measures for submission. I call your attention to a few documents that will be referred to repeatedly, and that would be the framework itself, which is document number 1. Then the presentation that Deirdre will be providing, that is document number 8. The decision document that will walk us through all the different motions that were made by the committee, recommendations to the council, that is document number 3. Apart from that, I'll call your attention to one other, only because it is very important background for the recommendations that we are making to you, and that would be document number 4A, Environmental Consequences of Alternatives, specific to the summary of the biological projections for management scenarios considered in this action. And for those of you who want to get into the weeds about how all the numbers were derived, how the model works, the SAMS model, which is called the Scallop Area Management Simulator Model. For those of you who would like to get a better feel for that, document 4A, and within that document, there are very helpful figures that show how the SAMS model is structured by area, statistical areas and stratum boundaries, crafted by all those who provide us with the analytic support for all our decisions. After that particular figure, that is figure number 1 in 4A, you'll see some projections, projected total scallop biomass for the scenarios under consideration, and there are a few of them. And Deirdre will discuss those a little later on when she gets into her presentation. So I just wanted to call that to your attention because it's very informative. Now, Deirdre will give the presentation, and the presentation will lead us to, and she's smiling, suppressing a smile. The presentation will lead us to 9 different motions, okay, that were offered up by the committee. And by the way, I should emphasize from the get-go that the advisory panel, as always, has been extremely helpful to the Scallop Committee. And they've given this framework a lot of thought, and acting with the support of our technical staff, Deirdre and Jessica, they gave the committee some good guidance. And you'll see as we go through the decision document that quite frequently the committee agreed with the advisory panel perspective. And that was good. We're on the same page as the advisors. So she will bring us through slides 1 through 35, which was more background, description of the alternatives, analyses of the scenarios. Then we'll have 5 motions to make. Then we'll go back to Deirdre. She will finish up the presentation. After that, we'll have 9 more motions to address. That will be followed, after we're done with that, by action decision by the council on the framework. And we'll be given a presentation by Tom Neese. Tom Neese will provide us with some information regarding the sub-ACL allocation of yellowtail flounder to the scallop fishery. We have some updated information that might trigger action by this council. So, with that said, I'll turn to Deirdre and have her begin the presentation.
Thank you, David. My presentation is document number 8. And I was going to start with a few slides just to give you a sense of where we are in terms of 2009 updated reference points from the recent stock assessment, as well as 2010 projections. Of course, the 2010 fishing year is not over yet. We still have several months left until the end of February, but we did go ahead, the plan development team, and make some projections about what we think total catch will be, and so forth. So, where are we? This will help frame your thoughts for what to do in terms of specifications in the next framework. SAW 50, you heard this report at the September Council meeting. Dr. Weinberg reviewed it. There was a very successful scallop assessment this summer. A lot of progress was made. The 2009 results, I realize it's small on the screen, but in front of you, the resource was updated in terms of its status biologically in terms of fishing mortality. The resource is not overfished, and overfishing is not occurring. The biomass, this information in the middle, is way above the threshold values for biomass for this stock. Fishing mortality, on the other hand, technically overfishing is not occurring, but the updated estimates for 2009 do suggest we are right there, teetering right below the overfishing threshold. So it's just information to keep in mind. All of the measures, similar to how we always produce them, do have the expectation to prevent overfishing. But just so you know, this is where we were for 2009. In terms of 2010, this was in Framework 21. If you recall, that was a one-year specification package. It was delayed for various reasons and was not fully implemented until June of 2010, which is actually several months after the fishing year begins in March. The specifications allocated this 2010 fishing year were basically 4 access area trips in the different areas highlighted on the screen. And there were 3 in the Mid-Atlantic and 1 in Nantucket Lightship on Georges Bank. And there were 38 open area days at sea. So this is what the fishery received this fishing year. If you recall, when you set these measures, the target F, what you use to come up with these allocations, was set at a target of 0.24. And that had a projected catch or landings of 47 million pounds for the entire fishery combined. When the PDT went back and tried to see where we are in terms of catch for this year, landings right now, that's through September, is when we did this for our PDT meeting, we were right at about 48.5 million pounds for the year up until that point. So we made a projection of what we think will be caught for the rest of the fishing year through February, and this typically is what we tend to see toward the end of the year. Landings do trail off, and so we're expecting another 6 million pounds to come across the docks for a total of about 55 million pounds for the 2010 fishing year. That is roughly 8 million pounds more than what we had expected based on those allocations. Again, there could be lots of reasons for that, and we can't really get to the bottom of them until the fishing year is, in fact, over. But we do know right away a primary reason is that the Framework 21 estimate of catch per day was around 1,700.5. And now the updated estimate using actual data from the fishery in 2010, we see that it's closer to 2,200 pounds a day. So clearly a 500-pound difference there in terms of an average will make up a lot of pounds. There could be some days at sea carryover use and so forth. But there are other things that have gone on that have reduced catch, such as elephant trunk has not produced the landings yet this year that we expected. So there are lots of moving parts as usual. The updated estimate of F from the projections of the CASA model are now at 0.35. I want to point this out because it was very confusing last year. These values are not comparable. They are set, if you recall, under different fishing thresholds. The first value, the 0.24, was used before the assessment process when the F threshold was 0.29. So that's the reference there. And the reason that the values are higher now primarily is fishing selectivity is very different in this fishery compared to, you know, years prior. The fishing mortality on fully recruited scallops is that the scallops are much larger. So these values come out different. So now an F of 0.35, yes, it is higher than what the target was, but you really can't compare them in that regard. The new F threshold, to keep in mind, is 0.38. So the updated estimate of F is still below the F threshold. So overfishing is not expected to be occurring in 2010. In fact, if you remember 2009, it looks like it was just right there. The estimates for 2010 are 0.35, so a little bit more breathing room compared to 0.38 in terms of what we see for 2010. So this slide I don't want to spend a lot of time on, but because we just did Amendment 15, which is not technically approved yet, but I wanted to show, because there are so many numbers and this is our future, if ACL management had been in place in 2010, it was not because Amendment 15 was not approved yet, but had it been, this is sort of how everything would have worked. And I think it will help your discussion in terms of buffers and just a comfort level for where we are going with this next future framework. So the ABC was set in 2010 in Framework 21 to be 57.8 million pounds. And that includes a bunch of set-asides, so you remove those first. And had we removed those right from the top, you'll see the next three rows, incidental catch, research set-aside, and observer. Those three rows come off basically now right from the top. The column on the left is the projected, everything that we thought we were going to get with Framework 21, and everything 2010 actual is what we actually probably will get from this fishery this year. Again, of course, the fishing year is not over, so these values will change. But if you assume in the column to the right that all the set-asides are completely harvested, which generally they are, and if you assume the limited access general category fishery and IFQ fishery, if you assume all of that catch is also harvested since it's a quota, the difference basically falls on the limited access fishery in terms of what we thought they were going to catch would be 43.3 million, and what they actually probably will catch will be closer to 51 million. So there is a difference there, of course, about 7.7, as I said before, a little less than 8 million pounds. Mostly we're assuming all attributed to open area days at sea. But just to give you a reference of what that overage means in terms of now that we're in this ACL world, the numbers on the right kind of break that down for you. Had ACLs been in place, you would have taken that overall ABC and removed the set-asides first, bringing you down to 56.3 million pounds. And the way Amendment 15 is adopted is you take that total amount and you divide it between the two fleets, and you can see there 94.5% and 5.5%, and that's your basically split in ACLs. So moving forward, including Framework 22, those are the ACL levels that the fishery cannot exceed each fleet. So in terms of the limited access fishery first, their ACL would have been 53.2 million pounds. We set their target at 43 based on the allocations we provided. So there was a 10 million pound buffer in there from what you did in Framework 21. And as it turned out, the fishery went over the target by 7.7 million pounds. So you are still within that buffer. They did not exceed the ACL, so AMs would not trigger. This is basically kind of how this will work now. In terms of the general category side, I just want to point this out. In Framework 21, what you actually allocated was 5.5% of your target. So that management buffer, that big buffer we're talking about for management uncertainty, the general category fishery, which many people realized last year, they were also held accountable to that management uncertainty the way we did things before Amendment 15. So when they were allocated about 2.5 million pounds last year, had it been post-Amendment 15, when that division occurs higher, the general category fishery would have been allocated 3 million pounds. And this has, you know, come up in meetings, and people see this as an improvement in terms of dissociating that uncertainty for the two different fleets. So just what's shown on here is that that fishery would have received about 500,000 pounds additional quota had that division occurred where it now will occur after Amendment 15. So that's basically the story. This is where things could end up. Catch could be a little bit different by the time the fishing year is over. But had we been under ACL management, while the target was exceeded by 7.7 million pounds, AMs would not have triggered because the ACL was not exceeded. So Moving into Framework 22, as always, the plan development team is constantly working on our models and trying to improve them, and I want to highlight a few of the important advancements. We went into more detail at the committee level, but just so you are aware, the LPUE model that we use in our projections was obviously updated when we learned the information of the new, basically actual catch per day that the fishery was doing in the last few years. So we did update our estimate of LPUE per day, and when you combine that with the actual biomass of the resource right now, the future predictions of LPUE are in the 2,200 pound to 2,400 pounds, actually, in the second year range. So we do feel confident. I know I said this last year also, but we really do feel like we're getting there. We're actually estimating what the industry's telling us is occurring in the water, so we're feeling very good about that. Lower open area days at sea, of course, would be needed to harvest the same amount of catch when you make this adjustment. So right away, you would see a lower day at sea allocation than in the past, even if you wanted to keep things constant, since we are assuming 500 more pounds are caught on average each day. The other important change that was made is in the fleet dynamics model, and without getting too in detail, just to make sure people are aware of this, in the past, the model basically estimates where the fleet is going to go in terms of future years. And normally, the fleet would go where exploitable biomass was highest. And that happens to normally overlap with the areas that also have the highest catch rates. And for years, that's what we've seen, and that's how behavior has occurred. Recently, for probably lots of reasons, the highest biomass areas do not overlap with the highest catch rate areas. We're definitely seeing a huge divergence there, and we're trying to understand that better. But so the model was adjusted to send the fleet where the highest catch rates were seen instead of the highest biomass, and this made a very large difference, more than we expected, actually, and is also what the industry's been telling us. So now where the vessels used to be going in the model, they're actually now going to where the vessels are telling us they're going. So this is another indication that things are improving, and we're getting a better handle on that. So here's a brief slide of the timeline just to remind you of where things are. Again, everything's complicated because it's contingent on the approval of Amendment 15. This document assumes that Amendment 15 will be adopted as the Council approved it. So that's important to keep in mind. The plan, just so everyone is aware, that this framework would not be implemented until the amendment is implemented. So that is why you see implementation in June. Usually we could try to get this in time by May, which is still late, but it's probably going to get pushed to June because we need to wait for the amendment to be implemented first, and they take longer for review. So, okay, long introduction, but I think it's important to set the stage for kind of where the resource and the fishery is right now. The Framework 22 document, document number one, very similar to years past. Basically, the primary purpose is to set the specs for the next 2 years. One difference in this action is we are setting a default third year of allocations, because in Amendment 15, the decision was made that that's better than just having the year before roll over, since we're constantly implementing things late. So we do have a third year of default measures, which we assume will be replaced. The other major part of this framework would be to identify the RPM measures based on the 2008 biological opinion. So there's a section in there about that. And then there's a bunch of other sections that are just the normal kind of things that we always need to do in frameworks, and several considered and rejected alternatives that are described. David already mentioned Document 4A has the biological and economic impacts. Document 4B has the impacts on turtles, and Document 4C is the impacts on EFH. I apologize. They were all coming piecemeal, but our committee meeting was the day before the council mailing, so couldn't really be avoided. So all of those together encompass the biological and economic impacts from the measures. So getting into the actual scenarios, the no-action alternative, we have to analyze, of course, that would be if the 2010 measures roll over. The ABC has already been set by the Statistical Science and Statistical Committee. They did this, I believe, at the September Council meeting. They set this for the next few years. Again, just so there isn't confusion, on the table on the screen, which is also in the document, the SSC sets ABC in the shaded row that's up there. and that's the catch. And catch includes landings and discards. But we broke that out so everyone could appreciate the fact that those discards can't be allocated, obviously, to the fishery, so you need to take account for them. And then the ABC that we set the fishery based on is actually the landings, the column in bold. So those are our ABC values that we obviously do not want to get anywhere near in terms of specifications. So the actual specifications, we looked at three alternatives for this framework, and all three of them include four access area trips, which is exactly what the fishery got this year in 2010. And the days at sea have been set based on the new hybrid overfishing definition that you approved in Amendment 15. We basically set the open area days at sea based on the highest amount that we could, which would be the F threshold, the 0.38 in open areas. In the past, this had been a source of contention in terms of, and the reason we had all of these different F targets, if you will, in the past. Now that the hybrid overfishing definition has this component of it, it makes our job on the PDT easier in terms of identifying scenarios. So now we had our marching orders. We knew what F had to be set at in open areas. Now we just looked at the access areas in terms of how we could potentially allocate that to the fishery. And the only thing we tried this year is to allocate something that we're calling split trips. And the reason we did that is we have one alternative that looks at full integer trips, which is how we've allocated this fishery in the past, and we have another alternative. In some years, there'll be more biomass in a certain area that we technically could allocate, but it's not enough for the whole fishery to get a trip. So what we did with scenario number one is we allocated a split trip. So half the fleet will get a trip in one access area and half the fleet will get a trip in a different one, and we would allow the vessels to trade just like they can trade normal trips. So that's the primary difference. And then the third scenario is actually including a one-year closure in the channel. So those are the three overall scenarios. The first one, alternative one, is the preferred alternative from the plan development team, the advisors, and the committee. So all three groups are endorsing this alternative. The reason the PDT level at first was not sure this could work is because administratively we needed more back and forth with the agency to determine whether or not we actually could administratively give half the fleet one trip in one area and half how we were going to do that and how we were actually going to allocate that. We talked to the advisors about it in more detail, and the suggestion to the committee was a totally random lottery. And that's what we developed, and that's what's endorsed. So what's on the screen right now is the committee preferred motion for scenario number one, including the details about the lottery, as well as for the third year, the default year. We did have to set specifications. You can see on the screen what they would be. The committee did recommend that the days at sea for the third year be reduced. So in terms of being precautionary, since estimates several years out are more uncertain, they're recommending that the days at sea be 75% of what the model estimates in an effort to be precautionary, understanding that those would be replaced with updated information, but giving more days at sea is easier than taking days at sea away was kind of the gist of that motion. So that's the committee's preferred recommendation. Just a quick slide about how the lottery would work. Staff has worked with the regional office since the committee meeting to kind of figure out exactly how we could do this, and we think we figured out what we expect, or from the discussion at the committee level, what people had in mind. So the first year is very straightforward. If you notice from the slide before, for 2011, there are only two half trips, so it's very easy. We take the full-time permit numbers, we randomize them in Excel, nothing fancy. The first half of the vessels get one area, the second half get the other area. 2012 is more complicated because there are four split trips. If you look on the screen, there's actually a half trip in two areas on Georgia's Bank and two areas in the Mid-Atlantic. So we had a long discussion about how are we going to do that, how would it be fair, should someone get one in the north and one in the south, and it went around and the advisors said very clearly, no, that would be viewed as unfair, and what's fair to someone is not fair to someone else. It will be viewed as, you know, someone playing with the numbers. So do it totally random. Make it a complete lottery so that there's no surprises. And then the other request from the advisors was that you make it visible who got what right in the framework by permit number so people can start discussing who they're going to trade with. And actually, it is public information in terms of what you're allocated, not what you actually catch, but in terms of allocations, that is public information, and they are requesting it be right in the framework. And from what I understand, that can be done, and that's what we'll do. So for the second year, it's just a little more complicated. We have to run it a couple more times. We did put a restraint that you can only get one half trip per area. So there wouldn't be a vessel, for example, that would end up with two of the four trips in the same area. So we did put that restraint on it. We can revisit that if you want it to literally be absolutely random so that one vessel could end up with their two unknown trips being from the same area. But the way that we actually ran it, and we have it in Excel already, is that each vessel would end up with two additional trips from one of those four areas. From two of those four areas, I'm sorry. So that's how the lottery would work. In terms of alternative two, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this since it's not preferred. The only difference really is that this is full integer trips. So in some cases, you end up putting the fleet in a less ideal area than alternative one. Alternative three is the one-year channel closure. We've considered this channel closure several times. We heard clearly from the public and the council that a three-year closure in the channel is totally not workable. So the plan development team this year worked on a one-year closure because there still is high recruitment showing up in that region. All the same constraints on the fishery and impacts and issues that they have with this were voiced again. The one-year closure does reduce the overall benefits of this, so it becomes pretty marginalized and not very different or better than the other options. In fact, long-term, alternative one performs the best. These are just compared on a slide, so you have them handy, but I've already explained the difference between the alternatives. The third one, the benefit there is that you do have more access area trips, and people tend to prefer those, but now that catch rates are so high in the open areas, that's becoming actually less attractive than it was in the past. Okay, so in terms of now under ACLs, this is truly, after Amendment 15 is adopted, this is what will be kind of in stone, the different values that would be used in terms of triggering AMs potentially. So this is just for 2011, based on scenario one, which is the preferred option, the numbers and how everything would work out. I won't go through them in detail, but just so you can see, the only major changes from Amendment 15 you should be aware of is that the research set aside is now a set number. It's not a percentage. So you can see the 1.25 million pounds there is a set amount. That was new from Amendment 15. And you can just see the division and how it would work moving down. So the new target for the limited access fishery, just to compare it to this year, would be 47 million pounds, and their ACL is 54 million pounds. So you'll see there still is a substantial buffer there, and not as high as it was in the past, but a lot of changes have happened with the overfishing definition. But this difference in buffer is still the same process in terms of a 25% chance of exceeding the ACL. So in theory, it's still actually set up the same, but that actual buffer amount will always vary by year. So limited access fishery, basically this section just gets into the different days at sea allocations, and there still will need to be a yellowtail compensation if one of the Georges Bank areas close due to the yellowtail bycatch tack. That still is on the books. It is not under consideration to change in this framework, obviously, or framework 45. So this we still would need to include days at sea and open areas if one of those areas close early. For the general category, the Northern Gulf of Maine hard tack will have to be set in this framework. The PDT used biological information from a recent survey to update that estimate, and the new PDT recommendation would be 31,000 pounds. The APN committee reviewed that and actually recommend the status quo, which is 70,000 pounds for reasons that are explained mostly in a correspondence you received from the state of Maine. Then the incidental catch permit, again, that's a no action recommendation there, that stay at 50,000 pounds. Research set-asides, you do have to spend a little time today to identify priorities. for 2012 research set aside. The advisors, NPDT, had some recommendations. The committee endorsed those. So the final research recommendations are on pages 38 through 40 of document one. So you would need to include those priorities so that the announcement could go out next year. This is just a section that we would include if, in fact, you adopt scenario three, the channel closure. Moving on to turtles, this is getting toward the end of the document. We do have to include measures to limit limited access to scallop fishing in the mid-Atlantic during the turtle season. These are basically the same measures we reviewed last year and considered: different seasonal closures, different restrictions in terms of the number of trips or days at sea you can use during the turtle season. So we did adjust the actual seasons a little bit based on new information, but essentially it's the same range of measures we considered last year. We did combine a few of these measures similar to last year. Some of the impacts were combined in an effort to kind of put together a package that would do the most for turtles. But keep in mind, everything has to stay under that more than minor threshold that we discussed quite a bit last year. We did, for a little bit, have in there potentially the use of a modified turtle excluder dredge as an actual RPM, and the more we talked about that, there has been a paper recently published that this is expected to have conservation benefits, but the more we talked it out, it really wouldn't comply with the RPM number one, which is based on effort limits. So in terms of complying with RPM number one, we did not include it in this framework, and also we felt we still had to do a little bit of work to standardize that actual requirement. So we didn't actually fully include it in this framework, but based on your decision yesterday on priorities, the PDT will work on that next year as a framework action. So there's the committee motion. It was basically to endorse the one-trip maximum as the alternative that they would recommend for RPMs. This section, unless you pick the channel closure, will not have to be adopted. This is just something you put in there in case we learn new information about the resource in the year in between fishing years that requires a reduction in effort. The only area that the PDT felt warranted this type of automatic review was, in fact, the channel. All of the other ones we felt didn't really warrant an automatic action in that regard. VMS. Very quickly, you heard a little bit about this in the enforcement report. There was some interest in looking at trying to make VMS more cost-effective for the general category vessels originally. The more this got discussed throughout the process, ultimately the decision was no action, leave everything the same based on enforcement committee input, advisory panel input, and ultimately the committee all suggest basically leaving these out. The possession limit, this one I explained at some point, I'm sure, to the council. There is a provision from Amendment 11 that allows a general category vessel to have up to 100 bushels of in-shell scallops while they're fishing seaward of the VMS demarcation line, and this was put in as a flexibility measure to recognize that meat weights vary during the year. And we did hear reports from nymphs that people were changing behavior and actually buoying off 50 bushels seaward of the VMS line and going back to retrieve those the next day rather than, actually fishing a second day. So we talked to the advisors about this. They don't believe that it's very widespread, but here and there it is popping up. So the PDT was requested to look at observer data to come up with perhaps a more appropriate bushel limit that would still provide flexibility, but not so much that it actually changes fishing behavior. So the PDT did do that, and the analysis suggested that that bushel limit could come down, but when all of this was going on, Amendment 15 increased the possession limit from 400 to 600. So this was kind of all for naught. And in the end, now that the possession limit is 600 pounds, the analysis would support that the 100 bushel, the no action 100 bushel limit, would in fact provide the flexibility you would still need. So the recommendation is no action here, even though the possession limit has increased. Okay, these last two are the final alternatives in the document. An issue came up about the elephant trunk area. Catch rates are very low. It is the last year that is an access area. Vessels are having a hard time making it very cost-effective. Catch rates are definitely down in there. So there was an idea that you could extend, perhaps, unused trips several months into the next fishing year when meat weights are better. You can see, you know, a 20% increase in catch of meat yields in the spring compared to the winter when we assume all these trips will happen. That would be good for the resource, but people felt when it was discussed more at the committee and advisory panel level that that catch would then count in the next fishing year and things would get very complicated with ACL management and it wasn't worth that risk because there are probably 4 or 5 million pounds left in elephant trunk. Okay, the last one would be, this is administrative, the Georges Bank access areas, there is a automatic schedule within the regulations and it becomes very problematic for specifications when they're not in time. And since we chronically do not have specifications in place in time, it becomes very complicated. So this alternative would strike any reference to the Georges Bank access area schedule within the scallop regulations. Those are all of the alternatives. There's a few considered and rejected ones. You can read why they were rejected. I can stop here to see if there are any questions about the actual alternatives, and then the next few slides get into some summary analysis of the actual overall scenarios.
Yeah, I would suggest that we hold off on questions and ask those questions when they're appropriate to the different sections of the framework that we will act upon. So if that's all right with you, Mr. Chairman, I would next call your attention to the pages at the back of the decision document. Those are the pages that provide the advisory panel meeting motions and the committee motions. Page 8 is where you should now turn, showing the committee meeting motions. Deidre's done a great job describing all of the different elements of our decision document. And now I would like to make a motion on behalf of the committee that the council adopt bear with me, Mr. Chairman. I've got to see what we have up on the screen. Okay. All right. That the council adopts section 2.4 of the Framework 22 document. The committee endorses as preferred motion 1 and motion 2 from the advisory panel with clarification to include 2013 default allocation shown below. So that is the motion, and to simplify this, all you need to do is refer to the table that Deidre has referenced, and so have I, and that is the table in the middle of page 8 where you see the different allocations for access areas, the numbers of trips, and you see in the right-hand side the open area days at sea allocations, 32 and 11, 34 and 12, and 26 and 13. Deirdre was quite correct, of course, as she always is, that the committee decided to be precautionary with regards to 2013. And indeed, with updated information, it very well may prove to be the case that we will, this council will increase the days for 2013. But just to wait and see as we get updated information. Also, Deirdre, working with the regional office, enabled the committee. Well, actually, the committee decided that the lottery approach was the wise approach, and the specifics were worked out by Deirdre with the regional office. So apparently, we do have a lottery strategy that is administratively feasible. Consequently, with the committee being in favor of this particular action, with the advisory panel being in favor of this particular allocation strategy, and with the plan development team being supportive too, because, as it says, it's best, it performs the best in terms of impacts on the environment, that is the rationale for the motion made by the committee.
Committee motion, discussion. Rick Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to follow up and comment that I think the PDT and AP both deserve credit for coming up with this split fleet allocation to deal with the half-trip question. And I think that's a significant improvement and step forward in terms of being able to utilize that resource, because in the past, if half a trip was indicated in an access area, we really haven't been able to figure out how to administer that. So I think this really is a good improvement and a very positive development. But again, I think, and I would support the idea in 2013 of being precautionary. I believe Mark Alexander raised that issue in committee, and I think it's a very appropriate way forward, because otherwise we might get in trouble if people exercise those days early on in 2013 before the next framework were in place. But that's really just a placeholder for now. Thanks.
Anything further? Anyone in the audience? Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smallwoods, Fishery Survival Fund. We endorse this motion. We think it's very good. In my view, the advisory panel has done an excellent job. The Scala PDT is excellent, the best I've seen. The committee is pretty good as well, and it's well thought out. So that's complimentary starting the day. But one thing I want to point out.
Good job, Ron.
Okay.
That was hard for you.
And it bothers me a little bit when we talk about we're fishing close to the overfishing. And we are fishing exactly where we want to be, close to optimum yield. If you look at the fleet, it's in the open areas. The catch per day is the highest and is increasing. The meat counts are getting, the meats are getting larger. And the overall abundance trend is upward for the resource as a whole. And if, in fact, we tried to fish at the target, for example, if it was an IFQ fishery or we went with the cutback in days in the initial framework 21, we would have landed 8 million pounds less, $80 million ex-vessel, or $250 million to the economic activity to the coast from Virginia to Massachusetts. So we are fishing exactly where we want to be fishing. Remember, we have a lot of buffers and a lot of protections in the system. As far as the 2013 being conservative, it's not being conservative because we think there should be less fishing that year. Actually, the projections show an expansion of fishing. We're just being precautionary because it's easier to add as opposed to subtracting, like was just mentioned. So I just hope that during today we don't color the fishery as being so close to overfishing that we have to add more conservation. We're doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Anything further from the council? You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Fifteen opposed, abstentions, motion carries, 15-0. David?
All right, Mr. Chairman. The next action for the council to consider pertains to the Northern Gulf of Maine, the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC, and the framework document itself. There is a figure that shows the boundaries of the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC, and that would be
page 30.
Thank you. On page 30, you can see the grayish-purple area is the Northern Gulf of Maine scallop area. I noted at the committee that it actually is more than the Northern Gulf of Maine, but that's the way it's referred to, which splits right through the State House in Boston and goes out beyond the Western Gulf of Maine area and goes all the way up to the U.S.-Canadian border. So it is a large area defined by us as the Northern Gulf of Maine scallop area. We had, as noted by Deirdre, a letter from the state of Maine relative to this particular allocation, this TAC, and that's document number 7. And this document, this letter from Ms. Braun, makes it very clear that the state of Maine's position on this is one of support for the status quo. And if you would turn to the last page of that letter, up above the signature, you'll note that she says, for the time being, a Northern Gulf of Maine TAC of 73,000 pounds should prevent a premature closure of the Northern Gulf of Maine due to state waters landings and should enable fishermen to continue to participate in the state waters fishery. Goes on from there. State of Maine made some very compelling arguments regarding keeping it at status quo. The advisors agreed with that. The plan development team actually had a lower number, but the committee was persuaded by the state of Maine in particular that this made sense. The rationale for our motion is shown underneath the motion itself, which is I move on behalf of the committee that the council accept the advisory panel motion to recommend the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC be left at status quo 70,000 pounds. That is the motion made on behalf of the committee.
Discussion on the committee motion. Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Last chance. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. David? Oh, sorry.
All right.
And one abstention. 15-0, one abstention.
All right. The next motion pertains to the incidental target TAC, which right now is 50,000 pounds. After reviewing the pros and cons regarding this particular status quo number of 50,000 pounds, the committee agreed that indeed it should remain as is, and our decision was guided by the plan development team that indicated it should be 50,000 pounds. There was no need to make a change in it. So I move on behalf of the committee that we keep the status quo value for incidental catch of 50,000 pounds.
Discussion? Mike Leary.
So is there still an incidental catch permit? That's my question. What's incidental catch?
See?
This is a class of the general limited access general category permits that received after Amendment 11 up to 40-pound permit, and they can land up to 40 pounds on any trip. And there's no, you know, individual cap or anything. This is a target tack. It can be exceeded. Right now, there's a table in the document that shows you the last 2 years where it's been. It's well below this amount. But we didn't feel it was worth reducing yet at this point until we have a few more years of better information. A lot of these vessels didn't have VMS and so forth. So because it's a target, we felt it should remain as it is, and we can always adjust it.
Yeah, Mike, if I may, it's on page 34 of Framework 22. And I'll just highlight the underlying text that gets to your question specifically. While catch is substantially lower than the target TAC of 50,000 pounds, the plan development team discussed that there may be some level of reporting uncertainty, so it may be worth keeping the TAC at 50,000 pounds for now and reevaluating it in the next framework. So it will be subject to reevaluation, but for now it seems to be the sensible approach, 50,000 pounds.
Anything further from the council? David?
Just a question for Deidre. You just said that they're not required to have VMS? They are required, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, they're required to have VMS, and it's got to be pulled every 30 minutes.
Fishing, yes.
Okay, so anybody that has a 40-pound permit has to have a VMS. Okay, I just wanted to be sure. I thought I heard otherwise.
Anyone else? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 16, that's unanimous. David?
Okay, I call your attention to pages 38 through 40 in Framework 22. That provides the research priorities for 2012 and 2013. A lot of work has already been done on research set-aside issues, and that work was summarized by Deirdre on slide 19 in her presentation, where she noted 2.7, the set-aside itself, in terms of the amount of poundage that we have set aside for that. The research priorities for 2011, she noted that indeed that the committee identified those priorities back in May, and now we're looking to 2012. The plan development team has already discussed those priorities. That happened in October, and they did make some minor changes. We received those minor changes at our committee meeting. The advisory panel, of course, received them as well. As a consequence, the advisory panel and the committee both endorsed the plan development team changes, and then we made a few others of our own. So to crystallize this for your benefit, there was a motion to be made. And it is that I would move on behalf of the committee. Council accept the advisory panel RSA research priority recommendations as listed below, in addition to the plan development team recommendations, with number 2 as high priority, number 3 as high priority, number 1 as medium priority, and 4 through 6 as other priority. I'll read the whole thing, Mr. Chairman. I suppose that's the appropriate thing to do. Bear with me. Number 1, assess abundance and biomass of scallops in the open areas, other resource areas, and determine the National Marine Fisheries Service survey dredge efficiency in those other resource areas combined with existing bullet under medium priority. Number 2, add as a priority research to support the assessment of the loggerhead turtle population in the mid-Atlantic and put in either high or medium priority, that is satellite tagging and investigation of seasonal movements, etc. Number 3, determine seasonal bycatch rates of yellowtail and other key bycatch species. Incorporate in bullet point number 2 of the plan development team recommendations as a high priority. 4, if a habitat research area is identified in a future action, allow RSA funds to be used for projects to enhance scallop production using rotational strategies. Number 5, develop methodologies for the scallop fleet to collect and analyze catch data on a near real-time basis, i.e., that is, meat weight, bycatch, etc., study fleet concept. And finally, number six, continued scallop dredge environmental impact studies. Yes, that is it. So those are all of the research priorities offered up by the plan development team. The advisory panel and the committee embraced all of them.
Any questions? Go to the audience. Any comments from the audience? Back to the council. Last chance. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. Unanimous. David?
All right, the next. All right, let's see here. All right, the next motion pertains to the VMS. And Deirdre, would you help me out here? Where in the Framework 22 document is reference to that particular topic? I can't find it quickly.
Section 2.11. It's toward the back, page 50. There were two alternatives originally. Over time, now there's really just one, which would be to allow a vessel to turn VMS unit off if it does not intend to land scallops. And that's kind of where we ran into trouble with this. It was very difficult to define. You already heard the enforcement committee input on this. The advisors pretty strongly felt that VMS is working, leave it alone. They recognize that there are additional costs, particularly for the smaller permit classes, but in the end, that's, in their opinion, the cost of business, and VMS is important for this fishery, so leave it alone.
Okay, thank you, Deirdre. We were given a presentation regarding the VMS, the power-down situation, and that was very helpful for us. It was referenced yesterday, I believe. And after some thorough debate on this particular issue, listening to the input from the advisors, certainly from the advisors specifically, we made a motion, and it would be, I move on behalf of the committee to move alternative 2.11.1 VMS to the considered but rejected part of the framework. And the rationale for that is shown on page 11 of the committee motions, relatively brief and to the point, that we did indeed agree with input from the plan development team, the advisory panel, and most importantly, I suppose, the environment, the enforcement committee, that VMS is needed in this fishery to ensure compliance with area closures, and this issue is not critical enough to warrant the time needed to develop specifics of how to deem a vessel is incapable of landing scallops. So on a unanimous vote, we move to put this in the considered but rejected section of the document.
Questions from the council? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Last chance. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. David?
All right, I believe that Deirdre has some more slides to present that provides the background information for the other four motions that we have yet to make.
How many more motions do we have, David? And then we're done?
Well, we would be done, except Tom's going to complicate matters. So after we are almost done, Tom will provide some information that I think is relevant for groundfish discussion tomorrow, or we could do it today, but it's also relevant for tomorrow as well.
Okay. Deirdre?
I just also wanted to say, I don't know if you were planning any kind of break, but this is the turtle-related things, and it will take me, 10 minutes or so to get through the background analysis of the turtle stuff. Okay. All right, so if you go back to your presentation on, you flip to slide 36. As I mentioned before, there are several measures in the document. We looked at a full range of things designed to comply with the first RPM of the 2008 biological opinion, which is to limit limited access scallop fishing effort in the mid-Atlantic during the turtle season. The turtle season is broadly defined primarily as June 15th through the end of October. So that's the season that we focus on. It is focused on the limited access fishery. The RPM did not require measures for the general category fleet. So it has to be some kind of limit on this fishery in the mid-Atlantic during this time period. But it's not specified what it has to be or how much. The only direction or guidance or limit, if you will, is that the measures themselves cannot have more than a minor impact on the fishery. Again, that's not really specified in terms of what is more than minor. So what the plan development team did, we used the same approach that we did last year in Framework 21. And it's we tried to model how much effort will be shifted caused by an RPM measure specifically. So we look at what the fishery would have done before any RPMs, and then we try to evaluate what a specific RPM measure would do in terms of shifting effort that would have occurred in the mid-Atlantic during that season and the impact of that being shifted either out of the season or to George's Bank instead. So it's the same exact thing we did last year. I won't take a lot of time. It's the same methodology. We did update a lot of our assumptions and estimates using updated information from the fishery in the last 2 years since we worked on this for Framework 21. You need to understand there are lots of assumptions that go into this, so the actual results are a bit uncertain because we are talking about fishing behavior, and we don't really know, of course, exactly what vessels will decide to do when an RPM is imposed on them. So a lot of this has to do with best guess estimates in terms of their behavior, and so you just need to keep that in mind. So that's everything we did for Framework 21, and we repeated that again. The part that is new about the turtle analysis, which the plan development team is very excited about, is a paper was recently published by Kimberly Murray from the Science Center, and she is a member of the Scallop plan development team. And this work is basically a model that allows us to come up with a bycatch rate, an actual bycatch rate of the turtle of the scallop fishery in terms of turtle takes. And we haven't been able to do this before, but now we can actually quantify the number of turtles that we expect to be taken in this fishery using the information that we have for our projections of effort. So her model took 2001 through 2008 information about the fishery, sea surface temperature, and a lot of other factors related to turtle interactions with this fishery. And it basically computes a monthly turtle take rate by area. So we can look at just the Delmarva access area as an example. We can look at what the risk or take rate for turtles would be by month, and we can actually look at that and say, okay, some sort of restriction during these months would have this kind of an impact, and in terms of the number of turtles we expect to be reduced in terms of interactions would be this. So this is a huge step for last year. I think it was frustrating and hard for some people to say, okay, well, here's a bunch of measures. We're not really sure what they're going to do for turtles, but this is what we think they're going to do qualitatively, whereas now we have a quantitative estimate of what they actually might do. Again, still contingent on the same assumptions of effort shifts and fishing behavior, which are always difficult to predict, but it certainly is much more informative than what we were able to produce last year. So this was presented to the advisors and the committee. Unfortunately, I don't have a PDT recommendation because all of this happened very quickly. The paper was pretty much just published. So a subset of the plan development team worked on this because it was after our plan development team meeting. So unfortunately, we as a group weren't able to kind of look at all of this and give you a recommendation. But we were able to present it to the advisors and the committee, so they do have a recommendation for you. After they reviewed these two components in terms of what's your threshold of more than minor, a few of the options we looked at did become, if you will, disqualified in that they were going to have an impact of something what we considered more than minor. And as well as combining that with the new turtle information, both the advisors and the committee endorse the one-trip maximum. And that would be of the two mid-Atlantic access area trips that each vessel is allocated, they would only be allowed to use one trip during that turtle season. They would have to use their other mid-Atlantic trip outside of the turtle season. So that's the preferred recommendation. Just going to review the analysis a little bit without getting too involved. Document number 5, we spent a lot of time on at the committee level. This is basically our entire assessment of what is more than minor. We tried to review what we worked on last year in terms of these thresholds. The same kind of threshold comfort level, if you will, was established this year as well. If you recall, in Framework 21, the committee felt that anything that had more than a 10%, it would cause more than 10% of effort to shift from a particular time period to another, was more than minor. So we kind of took that approach again, and in those tables 1 and 2 in that document, you can see the different shifts that are expected from different RPMs. The range of the alternatives, I'll just explain one to make sure people follow how it works. Document 5, page 4, is table 1, and this is an estimate of basically the impacts of the two-month closure in Delmarva. So one of the alternatives would be that you close Delmarva for September and October, and column A, I'm sorry, the table goes over 2 pages. It makes it even more complicated. But column A is basically the most simple, straightforward two-month closure, and all these different values show you the number of trips and days we would expect to occur during September and October, and then how many days would be then shifted to the other season. And why this is so important for the scallop fishery is that meat weights change pretty dramatically by month. And September and October, coincidentally, happen to be very low meat weight periods for the scallop resource. So shifting effort out of those 2 months and forcing it to be landed in a different time period, for the most part, is actually a benefit because you're going to be having the vessels fish when the meat weights are higher. So they will kill less scallops having lower F. So that's actually a positive impact on the resource and the fishery. Costs would also be lower because trips would be shorter. So in terms of a more than minor threshold, this one, without a doubt, is positive, actually. So could definitely be implemented without having the illusion of being more than a minor impact. So you can go across and look at the different alternatives that we considered. Again, the one that's preferred is column C, which is the one trip max. This is an estimate of how much effort would shift, and if you look down kind of pre-RPM, you can see the number of trips and days that we expect and catch to happen during that entire turtle season compared to the shift that, you know, that would be caused by limiting people to one trip instead of two. The other important thing is the change in F, row 15. This gives you an idea of what the impact on actual fishing mortality would be. And the reason that the second alternative is green, the 0.56 in column B, that one we highlighted as green because in the past, last year, and again, these are not set in stone, but last year we said any change in F that has more than a 0.5% impact on F would be more than minor. It's just, you know, too high in terms of our comfort level for our impacts caused by an RPM. Whereas the one that the committee chose, column C, you'll see is lower, and that's within, you know, certainly less than that 0.5 amount. So you move down a little bit, and you can see in bold the kind of the end story would be that the net shift, what we expect to be the benefit for turtles from this RPM would be 737 days that would have occurred during this entire turtle season would be shifted to the other season, which is a lower risk time for turtles. So that's basically what you gain. In terms of that being a percent of the total effort, that's about 7%, which is, again, below that 10% we were talking about as kind of a comfort level for impacts. So, again, this is still uncertain. You never know, but I think the reason, to be honest, maybe the primary reason that the committee and advisors supported this option compared to some of the other ones is that this one actually has the most certainty in terms of what's actually going to happen because the seasonal closure ones are a portion of the turtle season. So if you close a fishery for 2 months, but there still are three risk months in terms of turtles, some amount of effort you have to assume is going to still occur in those 3 months that would be when turtles are in the area. So the two-month closure will have a benefit probably for sure, but it's always countered by that effort just shifting to another time when turtles are still present. So that's all. It's a best guess at this point because you don't know exactly what the fleet's going to do. Whereas this alternative, I think people had an easier time getting their head around and having a more certain feeling leaving the table. Well, at least we know everybody's capped at one trip. No one can do more than that, and that gives us an idea of where we are. This does get complicated. All of this analysis assumes no trading of trips, which from what we just selected, option one, that does become complicated because now you're saying some vessels are going to get this number of trips in the Mid-Atlantic, some are going to get this. It all depends on the lottery. So you start to have a sense of distributional effects that some people will be impacted by this more than others. And then people trade. So someone in the north who never likes to take Delmarva trips will probably trade their trips and won't be impacted by this whatsoever. But someone taking in those Delmarva trips is now getting more restricted. So someone could end up with, you know, four trips in the Mid-Atlantic instead of two, and this would be a serious, you know, impact on them potentially as one vessel, as a fleet. It's reasonable and not more than minor, but on an individual basis, just understand there would be distributional impacts. The advisors did recommend, and the committee agreed, that if a vessel trades in additional Mid-Atlantic Access Area trips, they should be allowed a two-trip max during this window instead of the one trip. So that is part of the motion, I believe. So keep that in mind, that that's what the committee's endorsing, that there be a caveat, if you will, that if a vessel does trade in two additional Mid-Atlantic trips for a total of four, they should be allowed to take two trips during this window and instead of the one. There was some discussion at the committee level about that being a little more uncertain in terms of your conservation benefits, because if you take one trip from one vessel and another trip from another vessel, that the one vessel taking in all the trips now could have four, and he'd be limited to two, but those other vessels he got the Mid-Atlantic Access Area trips from could also take their one. So there is a risk of potentially more trips being taken during in this season with that caveat, but it's pretty limited in terms of how much of a additional trip effort you could have. Again, it's uncertain how much that would occur, but that caveat would include a little bit less benefit than what's described in these tables, because this table assumes no trading of trips. So I'm sorry it's hard to do this quickly at the council level, but that's where the committee left with this. People were most comfortable with that alternative. The alternative for the Delmarva closure, column B, for the longer season, July through October, this one, as I mentioned before, is expected to have a higher impact on F. So there was not a lot of attention on this one. When you do restrict people out of fishing in July, that's a very high meat weight time of year, and so you really are starting to impact F quite a bit when you force people to fish outside of that time, because it's such a good time from a scallop resource perspective. And I mentioned the last bullet about the assumptions. So getting into the impacts on turtles, as I mentioned, this new study, the PDT took the results of this monthly turtle take rate, if you will, by area, and we used this and basically took our projections of scallop effort and combined them together to come up with a estimate of turtle takes for the different management scenarios and RPMs. So the results of this is all described in document 4B. 4B is a summary of the impacts on protected resources from the different RPM alternatives primarily, and might be worth taking that out. Starting on page 4, 4 through the rest of the document of 4B describes essentially what this paper did and how the PDT used it and gives you some of the results. I have a few on the next few slides, but you might want to look at the larger tables in front of you. So these take rates that I mentioned, while they look like small numbers, this is actually an estimate. It's a blow-up part of Table 1 of that document 4B, which is on page 6. So let everyone catch up. This is those monthly take rates per dredge hour. So for every dredge hour in the scallop fishery, this is the estimated number of turtles, the take rate, if you will. And when we project that using the fishery information in terms of how much effort we expect to occur by month and by area, you can sum this up and get a total take rate, a total take number for this fishery. And Delmarva is the example on the screen. This actually has the ones that are circled are the months with the highest take rates. So it's July, September, and October. So those three times, in terms of impacts on turtles, restricting effort during that time and forcing it to occur in other months is definitely a benefit for turtles. And definitely, you know, one of the reasons we looked at the September-October closure is that you can see you would have that benefit for turtles by having it in the other months, with the exception of July. And then, luckily, for fishery resource, scallop resource information, that's also a time when meat weights are poor. Now, when you compare this to Hudson Canyon, which is not on the screen because it's too many numbers, but in the Table 1, Hudson Canyon actually, the take rate is lower for Delmarva than Hudson Canyon, but the takes per trip are actually higher for the Delmarva region compared to Hudson Canyon, because the scallop biomass is much higher in Hudson Canyon. So just so you know, there are differences by area. You can, you know, look at these numbers closely if you'd like, but you can... It's a very good tool to be able to see the risks to turtles by month for these various areas. And we did it for open areas as well, which is new. We didn't have this at the committee meeting, But now you can actually see the take rates for the open areas. The take rates for open areas per dredge hour, if you compare them, they're actually much lower. By month, you can see that. But there is more effort expected in open areas, so you do see those actual takes per day at sea increase. The column all the way to the right, the meat weight anomaly, that is a that table that actually gives you a sense of the impact on F. That's basically an average meat weight difference compared to when the survey takes place. So any negative numbers have a, you know, basically a lower meat weight than average. Those are, you know, worse times to be scallop fishing, if you will. Okay, so finally, just to get the final message, there's a lot of numbers on the screen, but Table 2, a little bit of background. This paper that I was mentioning that the plan development team used, the kind of conclusion of the paper is that before there were turtle chains in this fishery, the annual estimate of turtle takes is roughly 288. So this was an annual number of turtles expected to be taken in this fishery, 288. After turtle chains and several years later with different specifications, that estimate is now 125. So progress has been made primarily from lower fishery allocations and higher catch rates. So the fishery is moving in a good direction for turtles, and 125 is now basically the estimate before Framework 22. Framework 22, you'll see on the screen, the top view rows is showing you the number of estimated turtle takes for Hudson Canyon, Delmarva, and the Mid-Atlantic open areas, and then combined for a total of 64. Now, that's with no RPMs. So 64 turtles using the same information are expected to now be taken in 2011 compared to in 2008 when the paper was written of a 125. That reduction, again, has nothing to do with RPMs yet. That has to do with the fact that the where we're sending the fleet. There are only 2 Mid-Atlantic access area trips next year compared to 4, so that's a huge difference, and there are less days at sea. And the catch rates are so much higher that the vessels are fishing less time. So this is 64 turtles expected to be taken with no RPMs. Then as you move down the table, you can see with the different RPMs under consideration how many turtle take rates are expected to decline. The committee's preferred alternative is the first one, the one trip max. So you can see the top button. Okay. For 2011, the one trip max would, basically the benefit you get from that RPM would go from 64 takes to 60. Doesn't seem like a lot, but it is a 5% reduction in terms of the total. And the September-October Delmarva closure alone, the one I was talking about earlier, again, you can compare the 64 takes to 59 for an 8% reduction. So each RPM would have a slightly different impact in terms of its reduction in take rates and percentage reductions. So all of those values, you can compare the different years, and again, the meat weight gain on the side all the way over here to the right shows you the potential impact on the fishery, the scallop resource, any negative number implying that you would have some impact on F, and any positive value, like that two-month closure I was explaining, that's actually a positive impact on F. So together, I think these things give as good a picture that we could in terms of the impacts on F, the effort shifting, and now the quantitative estimate of takes by each of these RPMs. So the committee did see all of this, and in terms of their recommendation, again, is that the first column with the 60 total take rates expected. I think that's all I have for the turtle stuff.
That's it? Okay. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll take a 15-minute break, and we'll come back and get into the motions. Okay, before we go to Dr. Pierce for a motion, Gene Martin wanted to make some remarks.
Yes, and this is something that I may have brought up a year or two ago in my portion of reports, but I just wanted to remind or inform the council, if you haven't known about it, that NOAA has been sued by Oceana regarding the 08 Atlantic Sea Scallop Biological Opinion, and the briefing for that lawsuit has just begun. In fact, we just received the plaintiff's brief in support of its motion. The plaintiffs claim that the 08 biop, which is currently being relied on for council actions, including this one, violates the Endangered Species Act and the Administrative Procedure Act based on several grounds that they mention. It's about a 50-page brief. But they claim that the biop is invalid. They haven't necessarily specified exactly what remedy they're seeking, other than to say they want a declaratory judgment from the court that the biop is invalid. But theoretically, I mean, it could result in any kind of remedy on the part of the judge, including some sort of delay in allowing fishing in mid-Atlantic area until the biop is completed, or some sort of revised fishing opportunities or places that can be fished until a biop is completed. But that's only if the court agrees with the plaintiffs and finds against the agency. Now, the briefing schedule for this lawsuit, the plaintiffs, as I said, have just filed their brief either yesterday or the day before. We're scheduled to respond in January, and then reply briefs will all be completed by March 18th. So March 18th is the scheduled date for the last brief to be filed, and any time after that, the court can rule on this lawsuit. So I'm just giving you this as background information, so you won't be surprised if we did get a contrary decision in that lawsuit that could throw a wrench in the works for scallop management in the mid-Atlantic. Thanks.
Okay, Dr. Pierce.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Deirdre did a splendid job with her in-depth, comprehensive, very detailed description of what is in this framework relative to turtles, impacts on protected resources. She highlighted document 4B. It has a lot of that text. And I'll only highlight, and she also provided in that text, and she summarized tables 1 and tables 2 regarding the monthly estimate of turtle takes in the scallop fishery by area, and then estimated turtle takes before and after certain RPMs are considered. I'll highlight one other thing. It did come up at the committee meeting, and it was important for us to note, although we couldn't give them any credit, and that is, you know, since 2006, federally permitted sea scallop gear is obliged to have the turtle chains, and it's stated more than once that indeed that requirement is expected to reduce the severity of the interactions of sea turtles with scallop dredge gear. So, you know, the scallop industry doesn't really get any credit for that turtle chain use, primarily because of the definition of take. Take means touch, and I get touched. So, excellent job by Deirdre. Plant development team as well. They got very creative. The committee recognized the creativity that they used to assist us come up with options for us to consider regarding RPM. And I'll call your attention, because the motion is relevant to it, the motion I'm about to make, I call your attention to document number 5 that Deirdre went through, in particular the table on page 9 that shows the different options for 2012 allocation alternatives. So keep that in front of you, since the letters have importance. All right. So the committee, after hearing all of that presentation from Deirdre representing the plant development team and the staff, felt that we indeed did have a course of action to suggest, to recommend to the council, and on behalf of the committee. I move that the council support an RPM of one access area trip maximum in the Mid-Atlantic, Measure C for 2011 and F for 2012, and the letters refer to that table on page 9, with no seasonal closures. In addition, the caveat should be included that if someone traded in two additional Mid-Atlantic access area trips to have four total, it would be limited to taking two during the turtle window instead of one. So that is the motion on behalf of the committee.
Discussion on the committee motion. David Gaethel.
Yeah, I had a question either for Dave or Deidre. I think Dave alluded to it. A take under the Endangered Species Act is not mortality, right? It's not a dead turtle. It's just a turtle that took a ride on a dredge or... Could somebody – I'd like to know what the definition of a take is first, and then second of all, do we have a number for actual dead turtles?
The agency might want to answer. Yes, my understanding is a take is any kind of interaction with a turtle at all. The numbers I was describing before, the biological opinion, and I'd rather them confirm it, but I believe the number was closer to 300 takes back in 2003 and 4 estimated for this fishery, that is non-lethal takes. That's just all takes combined, and then they have a way to determine from that amount how many are actual. Well, first they look at adult equivalents, which is something lower than that. The scallop fishery happens to interact mostly with juvenile turtles, and I think the adult equivalent is the, you know, comparable type of number. That came down to something like 49 adult equivalent turtle interactions, and then something lower than that would be the actual dead mortality. I don't know the numbers by heart in terms of this fishery, but again, those are back in the biological opinion, you know, several years ago now. The numbers I showed on the screen are what we would project as total takes, any kind of interaction take. Now we're in the 60 ballpark, so using the same thing, some adult equivalent value would be something less than that, and then something less again in terms of mortality, dead turtle takes.
So the definition of take is harass, harm, pursue, hunt, shoot, capture, or collect, or attempt to engage in any such conduct.
Okay, thank you. What I'm trying to get at here is to me, I realize that we have to deal with the law, and the law says take. So, but to me, if you're not changing the mortality of the turtles, are you really doing anything? I mean, in other words, are we actually changing the mortality with anything we're doing here, or are we just inflicting, you know, an enormous amount of bureaucracy, if you will, on a fishery just so that they don't brush up against four turtles? That is an example. I mean, I'm trying to get it. To me, it's mortality. It's not take. I realize the law says we've got to deal with take, but I'm just a little bit concerned here that we're doing a huge amount of stuff that doesn't necessarily do, in the real sense, anything.
Anyone else on the council? Pat?
Yeah. So this, the alternative recommended by the committee actually has lower benefits for the turtles than the combination alternative. And the combination alternative, in addition to providing greater benefits to the turtles, really has no additional impact on the fishery. So I'm trying to understand what the rationale is for choosing the alternative with lower benefits to the turtles if there is, in fact, no impact on the fishery. I heard that Deirdre's argument about there being more certainty in the measures with the one trip, but, of course, the combination, you'd have both the one trip and the closed areas, and, frankly, by adding the caveat to the one trip, you've lost the certainty in that one as well. So the council needs to provide some rationale for choosing the alternative that they did.
Rick Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to speak to the issue of this alternative versus the combination, and that is there is no quantitative estimate of the exact net change in effort, I think, of combining the two. They're discussed qualitatively in the document, but we don't have a quantitative estimate of what the net shift in effort would be for both measures combined. The concern I have, if both measures were combined in the context of trading, which is essential to for the benefit of the fleet in the context of the rotational management program, where we have southern boats that may not want to take a closed area 2 trip, for example, and some northern boats may not want to take a Delmarva trip, they're going to trade access area trips. And so when you have trading and you combine the two measures, I think we would have a disproportionate impact in the mid-Atlantic, which is where this would really come home to roost as far as impacts. I think we would have probably more than a 10% shift in effort if you combine the measures in the context of trading there in the mid-Atlantic. And so I think there's a very real possibility that we exceed the threshold that the PDT has described as a reasonable threshold. I would also point out that we're required under the Act to minimize the impact of the takes. And I think that's really where one of the sore spots is that lingers in this discussion, because the industry has used turtle change, as has been pointed out. That is relevant to the minimization of impacts of takes. We're not seeing the types of mortality events, either through drowning or handling on the deck that might have taken place in the past when you didn't have chains. And so it's clear to me that there are benefits associated with the chains, but they're not documented, they're not credited, and that's relevant to the council's obligation of minimizing takes. But it's really not being taken into consideration. But again, I think if we combine the measures, we run the risk of exceeding the 10% impact that was defined as a threshold by the PDT. Thank you.
Pat.
Well, the chain mat issues is not relevant to this RPM, so we need to keep those discussions separate. And certainly, it does seem as if there's some benefit, and that's good. With respect to the combination of the two, and maybe I'm not reading the table correctly, but the table 2 in the document 5 does seem to show that the combination would result in a net shift in effort of 7.5%, so which is clearly less than the 10%, and that's why I said it was consistent with just the alternative being chosen. So do I have that wrong? And
no, that does include the net shift of either the one-trip max alone or the combination of the one-trip max plus the two-month closure. It's difficult to explain, but for those two measures combined, the impacts on effort shift alone are similar because the two-month seasonal closure is within the larger window. It's 2 months within the 5-month period, and you're talking about two different areas. So when we set up these tables, that vessel that would have fished in September and October still can fish in June, July, and August, or it could take its Hudson Canyon trip during September and October. So when you put all of that together in the way that we have it set up, the actual impact on effort shift is not very different when you combine the two measures together or if you have it alone. It takes flexibility away, which is described, as Rick mentioned, qualitatively, but in terms of the actual effort shift, the amount of effort we expect to be shifted out of that entire season is similar, because we do expect that the two-month closure would put most of the effort from what we saw happen this year, 67% of that effort went into June and July and August. So it still would be occurring during the turtle season. The thing that makes the combined alternative different than the one-trip max alone is all related to turtle benefit from at least what's been described in the analysis, we do think that that would have more positive impacts on turtles because of that overlap of the season when the turtle take rates are highest in September and October. But the document clearly says there's actually a section, I'll make sure everyone knows, on page 12 of document 5. That is the qualitative description that Rick was mentioning before. Those bullets try to illustrate what we think the combined impacts of the one-trip max and the two-month closure would mean for the fishery. And the last bullet, I think, captures most of it in that the combined alternative, you know, the one-trip max plus the two-month closure, those impacts will depend on whether the positive impacts on costs, meaning by the positive impacts of having the vessels not fish in September and October when meat weights are poor, those will have positive impacts on costs and meat weights and prices. Do those, though, outweigh the negative impacts of taking that flexibility away from them? This is stuff that, you know, we just can't completely describe or analyze for every vessel. Overall, though, you have to keep in mind that these tables, as it's been mentioned, assume no trading. So any time you then allow trading on top of this, you introduce that some vessels, if they do in fact trade in more mid-Atlantic trips, would be more restricted than these tables are implying. So you start to get that uneven or distributional effect where the vessels in the north that have none of these trips don't care, there's no impact, but the vessels in the south would have more of an impact. So these types of shifts and impacts on costs and decisions and where you to shift effort all assume no trading because we can't really do it any other way. So you have to just keep in your mind that the actual impacts would be different for some people that do trade in those trips. I think that's what the advisors and committee were trying to go with this caveat. But definitely closing in September and October for turtle perspective, when you look at the other document, the impacts on turtle takes, we would expect positive impacts for turtles with that additional measure.
Anyone else in the council? Anyone in the audience? Ron?
Ron Smollett's Fishery Survival Fund. Just a little bit of perspective on the loggerheads. First of all, as far as a take, even seeing a loggerhead turtle is a take. And my Endangered Species Act permit, I'm authorized 50 takes. When a take is when the ROV sees a turtle. I heard that at one time when we have a person in the masthead looking for the turtles, they wanted me to record every observation of a turtle from the masthead as a take. So that's the take thing. The law says that we have to reduce the impact of takes, and that's where the scallop industry's research has been going. If you go to the Southeast Fisheries Science Center website and look up their estimates of abundance, you could find that the high end of the estimates of loggerheads in the Northwest Atlantic is about 2 million loggerhead turtles. If you look at their information on what the overall annual take of loggerheads is in the fisheries of the Atlantic and Gulf Coast, it's 160,000. If you go now to the scallop fishery and read Kimberly's recent analysis, we're talking with turtle chains that the take is somewhere 180 turtles, of which the mortality adult equivalent estimate is 4. That's what and I believe that's a high estimate. What turtle chains have done is basically certainly decrease the observed takes. The purpose was not to decrease takes. The purpose was to decrease the injury and mortality, and most of the injury mortality with turtles is when they come in contact with the vessel. And they either come up in the dredge bag or where they hit the side of the vessel, drop on the vessel. Turtle chains prevent them from getting in the bag. Two other sources of injury and mortality that are documented is they get wedged in the between the depressor plate and the cutting bar or between the bail bars. The new turtle dredge eliminates that source of mortality. There have been 5 observed takes since 2005. 3 of them came up lodged in between the bail bars or on in the dredge proper. Those will not occur with the turtle dredge. The other known unknown source, but probably exists, is the ability of a standard dredge to run over a turtle and injure it. We don't catch examples of this in the fishery, but we could assume that it probably occurs. The new turtle dredge has been published in peer-reviewed literature, and it cannot run over a turtle. And in carcass tests, it indicates no injury or mortality of a turtle carcass hitting a dredge at the 5 knots. So we pretty much eliminated all sources of injury and mortality. But we're living in this fictitious world here, and if you look at the table on page 8, which talks about the difference between the options, and they say, oh, with one option, you know, estimated takes with no closure is 64. With this one trip, it's down to 60. If you go with option 2, it's 59. These numbers are really not significantly different. They're based on extremely weak layer after layer of assumptions and analysis. If you go to the table on the page 6 and look at it, as far as the takes per dredge hour, there's no significant difference between July, August, September, and October. In fact, our satellite, we have 16 turtles that we've put satellite tags on, and those turtles come up very interestingly in the Gulf Stream in many cases. They stay out in the ocean in February and March. They come on the shelf into the scallop grounds in about mid-May. We haven't really had encounters until mid-June, and they stay there right through October and start heading back down. So the population of turtles is pretty thick and pretty heavy throughout the whole mid-Atlantic within a particular depth and water body range. So if you look at this table, if you, in fact, tried to close an area in September, October, like Delmarva, and you look at the meat weight anomaly, the best time the fleet would want to fish there is going back to July. Well, it's the same amount of turtles in the water in July. The closure doesn't do a darn thing. You know, if we went the intelligent way and put a turtle dredge into effect south of Long Island from May through November, we'd eliminate just about every single known source of injury and mortality to turtles. But we can't seem to go logical because we have an RPM the regional office refuses to change.
Anyone else? Gibb?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gibb Brogan with Oceana. We agree with the regional administrator on this one. We believe that the combination approach is at the bare minimum necessary in this situation, that there are clear benefits and at very little cost to going to the combination approach, that similar to what was adopted in Framework 21. We'd also like to point out that in Framework 21 there was an omission. There wasn't any attention given to open area fishing. Right now, there's no limit, and that is contrary to what's in the biological opinion that says that it needs to limit allocated access, allocated effort in the mid-Atlantic. Right now, this new analysis, which is really quite interesting, looks and says that there's going to be 36 and 33 takes in the open area estimated in the next 2 years, and there's nothing being done about those. So we think that there needs to be something complementary done for the open area fishing down there. Turtles don't know the boundaries of these access areas, and in the areas that have low catch per unit effort in the open areas relative to the access areas, there's going to be a lot more bottom time. The dredges are going to be on the bottom a lot more relative to the access areas. So that component of the catch really needs to be taken care of with something for the open areas. I noticed that there was an alternative that was discussed. I didn't see much of a rationale for that, why that one was excluded, but we feel very strongly that there needs to be something in place for the open areas as this one goes forward. Thanks very much.
Drew?
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fisheries Survival Fund. First, to just bring up a point, the open area catch rates are now comparable to access area catch rates, so the argument that there's more dredge time in the open areas isn't really true anymore. The fleet is catching, as Deirdre explained in her presentation, with the when calculating the days at sea, the fact is that the catch rates are almost comparable, which is a testament to the good job we've done managing this fishery. And we need to continue to do a good job managing this sustainable fishery. As Ron pointed out, we're talking about numbers, and we're talking about four turtles out of possibly 2 million. I mean, that's really what we're talking about. And the numbers, you talk about, there's going to be 36 takes in the open area. I mean, we need to realize that we cannot take these numbers. You have to put these numbers in context. We're working off of 5 observed takes in 5 years. Those are our data points. So needless to say, we don't have a lot of certainty on what's actually, because we just don't see the interactions. We know that these are very rare events, that there's even an encounter, and an accidental mortality is even rarer. Putting that in context, what we do know is that if you take the regional administrator's advice and combine these two things, the two measures together, rather than going with what we support, the motion on the board, that there are going to be greater impacts to the fleet, especially to the southern part of the fleet. And it's just piling too much regulation onto this fishery for really no benefit and fixing a problem that doesn't really exist. And the fact is, the turtle population is going to rise and fall completely independent of the actions of the scallop fishery. We're just not a factor in their life cycle, really, at the end of the day. I mean, our impact is negligible. And so, but what you can do is greatly impact this fishery, and that's what we don't want you to see you do. And so that's why we strongly support this motion, because it does what it needs to do to be in compliance with the law. At the same time, you're not overly impacting the fishery. And if you were to combine both of them, it could have much more than minor impact on portions of the fleet, and that's just not acceptable, especially when we weigh the costs and benefits here. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Council members. Last chance. Ready for the question. All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? 1. Abstentions? None. Motion carries 15-1. Dr. Pierce?
The next issue is the bushel possession limit seaward of the demarcation line, VMS demarcation line. The committee discussed this at length, as we always do for all these issues, and we decided to take no action on the bushel possession limit seaward of the demarcation line. The rationale for our decision is shown on page 11 of the summary of the motions made by the committee. We looked at an analysis that was made by the plan development team that did support. Well, you can read it. There's no sense in me getting into that. So that was our action, Mr. Chairman, that we take no action. So there was a motion up there. Deirdre, do we need to take action on this? If it's a no action.
It's fine. I think you take no action, it just clarifies that you don't want to change the possession limit up or down.
So that was our position. There's no need for the council to take action unless it decides to do something different.
We don't need to take action unless one of you wants to take action. Does anyone want to take action? We're not taking action. David?
Let's see. The penultimate motion is the elephant trunk area extension. That also was on page 11 of the summary of our motions. And by consensus, the committee decided to take no action on extending the unused elephant trunk access area trips through May 31st, 2011. That is our position.
So it's another no action?
No action. And the final motion to be made, at least from the committee, is motion number 10, eliminate the Georges Bank schedule of access areas in the regulations. Deirdre covered that as well on page slide 26 of her presentation, where she noted for us, and the committee agreed, that we have a default schedule of access areas on Georges Bank that's created confusion, regulatory inconsistencies. So this alternative would eliminate any reference to the three-year schedule of access areas on Georges Bank. The advisory panel also supported it. So that I move on behalf of the committee to eliminate the schedule of Georges Bank access areas in the regulations.
Discussion from the council. Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Last chance. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. Dr. Pierce?
Just one quick question of Deirdre. The other issue that Tom is going to address, that particular issue is independent of framework 22, correct? All right. So if there's no other no other action to be taken on framework 22, I would be prepared to make a motion relative to that, and that would be I would move that we approve framework 22 and submit it to the National Marine Fisheries Service for review and approval.
Is there a second? Seconded by Terry. Discussion? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. The motion carries 15-0. One abstention. Dr. Pierce?
I would be remiss if I didn't, as I always do, just highlight the superb work of the staff, Deirdre, Jessica, as well as all the great support provided by the plan development team. And I'll echo it again, the industry advisors were extremely important in this whole deliberation regarding Framework 22. They were totally invested in it, and they offered up very constructive, very useful perspectives and, of course, motions. So thanks to all concerned. Now, the next issue, as I indicated early on this morning, is highlighted actually on the agenda for today's council meeting, and that is the second check mark under the 830 Scallop Committee report. And that is review updated projections of the yellowtail flounder bycatch in the scallop fishery for fishing year 2011 and 12. If adjustments to the yellowtail flounder subannual catch limit allocations are necessary, they will be considered in Framework 45 to the Northeast Multispecies FMP. So that is the issue to be addressed, Mr. Chairman.